Robinhood Radio presents Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willems. Michelle is a longtime journalist and herself is a published playwright of several theatrical works. She's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, Daily Beast, and the Atlantic websites.
Another opening of another show.
All right, we begin with the Broadway news, which means we begin with COVID. Hugh Jackman, arguably the biggest name on Broadway, tested positive again. And if you think he's not the main reason people are paying big money to see the Music Man, well, I checked the reduced ticket booth shortly after the news, and sure enough, there were seats for the Music Man. Now, Jackman made a heroic effort to beg people not to refund, but to go see his understudy. Likely a tough sell, but let's remember the name Max Clayton. My out-of-town friend said he is excellent. The audience has cheered, and Sutton Foster spoke about him at the curtain call. Hey, a lot of stars have been born that way, including Sidney Poitier and Shirley MacLaine. By the way, just a week after the Tonys, there were seats for virtually every show except the usual Hamilton and Six. Even Plaza Suite for the first time since that one opened. Now it closes soon, which always perks up business. Lots of empty theaters now. Hangman has closed, Take Me Out, and For Colored Girls Who Consider Suicide, that's gone. All eyes now on Paradise Square and Girl from the North Country. One show that started strong was a revival of Funny Girl. Well, half-price tickets always available for that one. And now Beanie Feldstein and Jane Lynch, the biggest names in the cast, just announced that they will only stay until September. Well, whether it was ultimately worth bringing that one back after all these decades, the jury is still out. One more thing regarding the Tonys. The awards show itself drew an audience of almost 4 million viewers, about a million more than last year, but still the second lowest viewership on record. No big surprise there. But at least it got noticed. I attended a press event last week for the Drama Desk Awards, which includes off as well as on-Broadway productions. Very good award thing. But the promoters of the awards always feel slightly ignored, largely because the New York Times chooses not to cover them. The winners all seem thrilled, and I will say the best drama was one I admire very much called Prayer for the French Republic by Joshua Harmon. He had the best line of the day, saying the awards ceremony was longer than his play, which ran more than 3 hours. Now, speaking of off-Broadway, my week was filled with it, starting with The Orchard, a most unusual piece done at the Baryshnikov Art Center on West 37th. And yes, Mikhail himself plays a role, a very touching role. This is a 9-character take on Chekhov's Cherry Orchard, with the main role played by the always wonderful Jessica Hecht. It's difficult to explain this experience. Hecht herself told me at the Drama Desk Awards, The Orchard is part high-tech and large part human emotion, and she's right. And high-tech it is. Instead of the Chekhovian tree, here we have a hovering robot of sorts. At various times, there are projections of the actors in kind of a grainy black and white style, and occasional words above us as if on our computer screens. Now, what's unique here is that you can also watch this from home. Go to Baryshnikov Art Center website to find out about that. The hybrid idea is intriguing, but it can be somewhat frustrating on both ends. Home viewers have found the text up very challenging, and significant passages of dialogue are in American Sign Language, Russian, and French, which go untranslated both places. The show is 2 hours, feels somewhat longer, and yes, often frustrating. Still, if you can get past the conceit of it all, there are moving passages, especially as you realize this adaptation comes from a Ukrainian, the Kiev-born Igor Goliak, who clearly understands the reality of having to leave a beloved home and build a life elsewhere. We may not all have watched beloved homes torn down or sold out from under us, but we all have our childhood memories from places we called home. Something new and inventive is being tried here, and I always applaud that. Again, that's at the Baryshnikov Art Center. Now, on the subject of going back, in time at least, I visited the Mint Theater at Theater Row on 42nd Street for its newest production called Chains. Now, this one was written by one Elizabeth Baker in 1909, and it feels as relevant and actually moving as if it were composed today. Dare I say they don't write them like they used to? Here we have 9 or 10 characters we get to know in 2 brisk hours, and there are passages only a female playwright could write. "Think about the risks," says one character. "Oh, he's a man, so it won't matter," comes a response. At the play's center is a man who's frustrated with a job that goes nowhere, a marriage that keeps him from traveling somewhere, and yet another chain, which I won't spoil, but seems to end his hopes of escape. These are complex people. There is humor and pathos, and somehow the chains feel all too real. I also saw the new drama on the same street at Playwrights Horizons, written by a hot young playwright and featuring the actress who just won a Tony. But critics are asked to not discuss this just yet, so stay tuned for next week on that one. As for what else is coming, well, the Public Theater, the off-Broadway house, still considered the best of the lot, announced its 2022-23 season, continuing the current themes of racial justice, equity, and disability rights. The season kicks off with yet another production of Lorraine Hansberry's 1959 play Raisin in the Sun, directed by Robert O'Hara, who also did Slave Play in a recent Long Day's Journey into Night. Performances are scheduled to begin late September. The season will also include the New York premiere of Baldwin and Buckley at Cambridge. Well, that's about James and William, likely going at one another with fervor. And from home this week, yes, you can still see things from home. You can stream the world premiere of Gong Lum's Legacy, written by Charles L. White, directed by Elizabeth Van Dyke. This special streaming presentation, only up for this week, was pre-recorded from performances at the theater at St. Clement's in April of this year. You can find that through www.newfederaltheater.com. Gong Lum's Legacy takes place in 1925 in the Mississippi Delta. Set against the backdrop of the Jim Crow South, we witness the unexpected romance that blooms between Joe Ting, a Chinese immigrant, and Lucy Sims, a black schoolteacher. And if that is not of this moment, well, I don't know what is. So anyway, Jill, a lot going on away from the not-so-great and not-so-white way.
What? Did we ever figure out why it was called A Great White Way?
And absolutely not. And somebody mentioned it at the Tonys. She said, isn't it something about, can't we just make it a nickname and not something like that? But no.
But I'm sure.
Well, yes.
It's got to have to do with lights. It's that simple.
That's exactly right.
And, you know, then because it was illuminated like a, you know, like a Christmas tree back in the.
Exactly.
And I'm sorry, this is the sort of thing that just makes me. So long short, The Great White Way. I wondered whether there was any other, if there was a better derivation. I was reading something the other day, and it was like, for 2 pins, I would do something, blah blah blah, and
yeah.
I was trying to find out what pins were. You know, what those, you know, for 2 pins, it's okay, fine, it's an idiomatic. It's an idiom, but what were pins?
I don't know that one.
Exactly. The point is it took a lot of digging, and Google was most unhelpful.
Yeah.
And I suspect that The Great White Way was, you know, we all grew up, it was something to aspire to. The lights, you know. Remember the Bee Gees?
The lights of Broadway.
Are
back on. What, you know, they're back on after 9/11. They're back on after
right.
The pandemic. So I get that. Why not call it The Great Light Way? No, because that makes
because
it sound
that's,
like...
Yeah, it makes it sound like something for Thomas Edison. What the...
Yeah, I mean, or L-I-T-E way. That would make it sound like it's lesser. I don't know. And I'm surprised it hasn't been...
But well. I'm surprised that I'm sorry, I'm obviously a failed wokist, but I'm surprised that it's that it's even a thing.
I am too. I'm surprised it isn't a thing. I'm surprised that on top of with everything else that's happened this year, why hasn't that become the latest issue? I don't know. I really truly don't know, and I wouldn't even know who to ask about it.
Well, I guess that's because it really isn't one.
Yeah. What can I say?
That's very funny.
Yeah, a lot of things that are strange these days.
And did anyone else other than Jackman? I thought I read other than Jackman, there was somebody else who.
Well, I had heard
somebody crucial that had tested positive.
I heard Patti LuPone. Tom, somebody told me that at the Drama Desk Awards, that Patti LuPone also had a second case. But I looked it up and no. So far he's the only one. People were nervous because there he was at the Tony Awards the night before when he probably already had some form of it, sitting with thousands of other people. But no, I haven't heard of too many others. I'm trying to think if there's...
Although this is when I remind everybody that the Oscars seem to go off, except for the slap heard around the world, somehow COVID-free in the midst of a major, what do you want to call it, out west.
Yes,
at the exact same time, which is, it's like if people can't put those two wires together, then I just do this. I give up.
Right. What was the last show? I know when I went to Skin of the Teeth, they canceled that for the whole weekend because of COVID. But I think I just heard one. It feels like.
So did I, and it wasn't Jackman. So I just wondered if off the top of your head.
No, not anybody else. But I wondered when I saw the tickets were available for Sarah Jessica Parker and Matthew Broderick. They have both had COVID at times, but individually. And when I saw tickets for the first time for sale for that, cheap tickets, I thought, I wonder if one of them got it. But no, they're both in it. But again, once a show comes to this last week, people kind of dive at it. That's what happened with Hangman. When I saw Hangman, it was half empty. But somebody said they went for the last performance and it was packed. Because the word gets out, oh, I see. If I want to see that, I really do have to go right now. I might even try to see Plaza Suite this week. I don't know. Not a lot of interest, but, just to say I was there. And I'm not sure even with Funny Girl. I bet they say they're coming back without those two stars. I wouldn't be surprised if that closes by the fall. But
right. Well, you had Beanie Feldstein, but that wasn't the one either.
Well, that's right. She definitely has had it. Yeah,
right.
She's still out of the show. And by the way, I'm hearing that her understudy is better than she is.
If press people are worth their salt, because I was just looking and I got, hey, New Hampshire native takes lead role in Broadway show after Hugh Jackman tests. Hey, everybody has their experience of, remember Lana Turner at Schwab's?
Absolutely.
Probably never happened, but it's still a good myth.
No. Anybody who saw Shirley MacLaine, a redhead they brought in at the last minute to do a pajama game. She was the understudy.
Yeah.
And there happened to be a movie producer in the audience. Same with Sidney Poitier.
I know.
He replaced Harry Belafonte at a tiny little theater one night. I think it was in Harlem. And there was a producer that night, the only night. And he's like, hey, I like this guy. I'm going to put him on real Broadway. And Sidney Poitier then does Raisin in the Sun.
That is, by the way, where you used to find talent. I know someone who found someone for a record, literally playing at the Hyatt or something in Danbury. If it wasn't the Hyatt, it was it was someplace that they had stopped
right,
into.
There's a lot of talent out there. That no
tons
shortage of
and
talent.
Exactly.
Anyway, the next couple of weeks are going to be very interesting, I think, in terms of how the summer goes and which theaters are opening, which theaters are closing, which shows are opening and closing. So. I'm on it. I'm on the case.
Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willens, produced in the studios of Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com.